WBEZ is supported by Impact Grants Chicago. Over 400 women come together in a unique model of collective giving. Each member contributes $1,000, and together those donations grow into $100,000 grants for Chicago nonprofits that address critical challenges across the city. By pooling resources, individual gifts multiply into greater impact. Listeners can learn more about Impact Grants Chicago and past grant recipients at impactgrantschicago.org/join2025. WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset.
The U.S. will take over the Gaza Strip, and we will do a job with it, too. We'll own it and be responsible for dismantling all of the dangerous unexploded bombs and other weapons on the site.
President Trump raised eyebrows and drew condemnation from around the world when he made that statement this week. He also shared plans to displace the entire Palestinian population from the Gaza Strip and turn the area into a, quote, Riviera of the Middle East. We checked in with two Palestinian Americans from the Chicago area for their reactions. Iman Abdelhadi is an assistant professor of sociology at the University of Chicago, studying gender and Muslims in the U.S. And Diana Uthman is a freelance journalist and Chicago media coordinator for the group American Muslims for Palestine. She has family in Gaza. We'll hear Diana's thoughts first.
Honestly, it was outrage. It was odd because it was shock, but at the same time, it was not shocking because of the nature of his comments about pretty much everything. They're always outlandish. And so hearing that was just kind of in line with his natural way of communicating. However, obviously the claims that he made and the policy recommendations that he was implying were, you know, something that were completely shocking to me as a Palestinian, as someone who has seen their family go through more than a year of genocide. And so it was also laughable.
When you talk about policy recommendations that were shocking, give me specifics. Like, what exactly made your eyebrows jump?
I mean, the ethnic cleansing and the forced expulsion of Palestinians from Gaza. That's absolutely ridiculous. And we know that the Palestinians in Gaza have been, struggling to stay alive in that land because they find it so dear, and it's their home and it's their lifeblood. And so to suggest anything other than helping to let them rebuild everything that has been destroyed and that has been destroyed by American financed and American made weapons is completely ridiculous. And so the Palestinians in Gaza have been tied to their land, and they will continue to be tied to their land, regardless of who or what tries to remove them from it. And so hearing him say this was completely maddening. And honestly, so many people that I was speaking to you yesterday and in the evening before were just kind of in a sense, a state of shock and outrage.
And you mentioned, Diana, the words ethnic cleansing there. I want to be clear for listeners. That's a euphemism for a campaign to force a population from a region by expulsions and other violence, often including killings and rapes. That term came to prominence in former Yugoslavia during the 1990s. To whitewash atrocities of warring ethnic groups. And then usage has spread to other conflicts. Professor, what's on your mind?
Yeah, it's absolute disgust. I mean, this is, the one thing we can say for Trump is that he is at least honest about what this country sees itself as, which is a global empire. I mean, the fact that someone can so arrogantly and casually claim another people's land, a people who have just been through 15 months of assault that has destroyed 90% of their homes, And to disregard the U.S.'s role, the U.S.'s fundamental crucial role in destroying Gaza, and then to sort of say this as if it's a humanitarian gesture. I mean, it's just, it's outrageous and it's absurd, but it's absolutely in line with the role that this country has played in the Middle East and in the lives of Palestinians for decades. And that's something that we all need to be thinking about. We need to be thinking about how this is a continuation of U.S. policy.
Now, the U.S. has no legal authority to do any of this, and it would violate international law. But does it still worry you that one of the most powerful people on earth, the president of the United States, is thinking this way about Gaza and Palestinians, Professor?
Yes, of course, it worries me. I think that the American people, and more importantly, people in the region, have very little power to fight back against these, illegal assaults. But I also feel that Palestinians have been steadfast in remaining on their land. You know, in Arabic, we have a saying that we say, well, smarter people than you have tried. effectively, Biden wanted to move Gazans to Jordan and Egypt and openly pressured Jordan and Egypt to take Gazans at the beginning of this genocidal assault. And he failed to do so. And Israel, one of the strongest militaries in the world, tried to displace Palestinians from Gaza, and they failed to do so. I don't think Trump is going to be more successful, and I don't think he has a logistical plan to enact this illegal assault.
Deanna, what are you hearing from friends and family here in the Palestinian American community? Are they concerned that despite how outlandish the plan is, that Trump might actually try to pursue this?
I think yes and no. I think they're concerned because, you know, although, as you said, America doesn't have the agency to enforce this, they can certainly facilitate it and they can certainly expedite it through the aid and through the weapons that they provide to Israel. However, they are not concerned in the sense that they know that the Palestinians of Gaza are steadfast and they will not allow anyone or anything to separate them from their land. And we've seen that, you know, evidenced by the thousands of people who walked back on foot to the north of Gaza when they were finally able to, even though they knew that they were going to be met with nothing but rubble and destruction. But at the same time, they were defiant in the face of all of that destruction, and they sought to return to their homes, even if it meant pitching a tent on top of the rubble. And so they listened to these words of Trump, and they returned back the sentiment that, you know, you can try and you've tried and others like you have tried, but no one will be able to remove us from our land and from our homes.
What are you hearing, Professor? I mean, are people maybe more focused on other pressing concerns like the situation on the ground in Gaza?
You know, at this point, very little can shock us fully. Palestinians at home and abroad have seen so much. The other thing that we need to realize is that a lot of this is a distraction from what's happening in the West Bank as well. As soon as the ceasefire started, Israel accelerated what has already been a huge land annexation and displacement project in the West Bank. So there have been massive assaults. The Jenin refugee camp, which, like Gaza, already holds a lot of displaced Palestinians. There have been massive home demolitions, land annexation, and killings in the West Bank. And so for Palestinians, we have so much to keep track of and pay attention to. And ultimately, we all have a clear eye that the U.S.'s unconditional support for Israel has to stop. Otherwise, we are going to continue to see the 8 decades of land theft and displacement continue and accelerate at different points in different places. But ultimately, the goal is the same, is to remove Palestinian indigenous to this land from their lands and their homes.
I know you have family in Gaza, Deanna. So talk to us about how they're doing.
You know, they have had certain family members try to return back to their homes to gauge the status of them in various areas in the north. And unfortunately, everyone who has returned has found their homes completely demolished. Not a single wall standing, not a single thing remaining intact. And so they surveyed the area and then they returned back to other family members that were staying in central Gaza so they can try to figure out, you know, what their next steps are. They are still facing difficulties, obviously, as a result of the genocide, as a result of the destruction of all of the infrastructure. They're trying to get back to school. Many of them are college students and they're trying to get online to try to, you know, salvage whatever they can of their education and of all of the time that they've missed as college students. They don't know what's next. A lot of them are in need of medical treatment that they haven't been able to get within Gaza. And they're trying to figure out whether that will now be possible. As of yet, they have not been able to get the treatment that they need and have needed since the beginning of the genocide. So, you know, they have had a moment to at least take a breath and, you know, look at what they're facing in the time ahead. But at the same time, not much has changed for them on the ground.
Have you been in contact with anyone just to hear their response to what Trump has said, the very latest?
Yes. And, you know, they have reacted in, you know, pretty much the same way that I've described. They laugh kind of in the face of it and realize that no one is going to remove their agency. Nobody is going to allow them to feel dehumanized, and they will continue reclaiming their humanity and they will reclaim their lives. But obviously, they realize that rhetoric is dangerous. And as Iman kind of mentioned, the difference between the Trump and the Biden administration is Trump says everything out loud. And so they realize that, and they know that it's not necessarily very much different than what they were facing under the Biden administration as well.
Well, Professor, the condemnation from many world leaders inside and outside of the Arab world, it was pretty swift after President Trump laid out his proposal for Gaza. Meanwhile, Secretary of State Marco Rubio and Trump Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt, they're trying to soften the president's comments. According to the New York Times, Rubio suggested, well, what Trump meant was to rebuild Gaza, not claim it as a territory. Are you convinced that's what he wants, to rebuild?
No, I'm not convinced that Trump wants to rebuild Gaza. I'm not convinced that Trump has any interest in Palestinians' lives and their well-being. And again, it's sickening that he's framing this as a humanitarian intervention. I mean, look, the U.S. has never had a benign relationship with Palestinians or the region in general. So I don't need reason to believe that this, you know, extreme right president is suddenly going to come in and try to help Gazans out unless he sees some form of profit. And he made that very clear. You know, I think that there's no way to see this outside the way that Trump sees everything, which is as a potential for profit and for American corporations and capitalists to come in and extract, you know, value from any situation. His ally Netanyahu has been struggling with his own far right support. Like, he's lost a lot of far right support over the ceasefire deal within Israel. And so what this does is it bolsters his image within his own public.
Now, the current 6-week phase of the ceasefire between Israel and Hamas started last month. Negotiations are underway to work out a deal for a second phase. How are you feeling, Deanna?
I'm very anxious to see, you know, what will happen in this next phase. I'm anxious to see if our family members will be able to, you know, receive that medical treatment that they need so desperately, whether they'll be able to begin rebuilding any of their homes. You know, these are things that we don't know what the future necessarily holds. I hope that they remain safe and that there's no continuation to the violence. And it's very frightening, as, you know, we've seen the escalation in the West Bank. And so we're never completely at ease, obviously, as long as this threat exists. And so we're just taking it day by day, you know, communicating back and forth as best we can. You know, communication is still not necessarily easy. There's no internet coverage really in the north. So when family is traveling back and forth, it's difficult to get a hold of them. So we're facing a lot of the same obstacles, and we hope that some of these will be remedied in the next phase of the ceasefire. Mm.
The images and video coming out of Gaza over the last few weeks during the ceasefire, they really show the monumental destruction there. Entire cities and towns have been reduced to rubble. People are returning to their homes only to find them destroyed and uninhabitable. And Deanna, I know that this is personal. You recently posted on your social media just about buildings that you and your kids would visit that no longer exist. So can you talk more about what it's like to be witness to this firsthand?
It's honestly, you know, so heart-wrenching. I can't even describe it. Like all of these places that we were able to visit and create all of these memories after having not visited for more than about 13 years, the last time we went, there was so much that we were able to do and experience, whether it was visiting a newly built resort on the beach or coffee shops or restaurants, or even my in-laws' home that they had just moved into in June of 2023 in the camp. And so they scarcely lived in that home that they spent years building, and it's completely gone. It's unsalvageable. And so looking at that and shuffling through all of the photos that I took there and the memories that we made, I just could do nothing but just sob, thinking about how my mind can't even wrap around the fact that all of those things no longer exist. And some of those people no longer exist. Even more importantly, and that's the only thing that, you know, I kind of remind myself of, is that, yes, these buildings are destroyed, these homes are destroyed, but as long as, you know, the people who lived in them are okay, then that should be our source of solace. But sadly, a lot of the people are not there any longer. And so that's what I keep coming back to, is that, you know, property and belongings and all of these things are, yes, very sad to lose, but I try to reorient myself back to the lives that have been lost. And that's by far the most grave loss of any of them.
Tell me your hopes then for next steps for the people of Gaza.
My hope is that they will be able to rebuild their lives and that they will never have to rebuild again, because so many of them have had their homes and their lives and their loved ones destroyed cyclically, you know, since 1948, not since the beginning of the genocide, not since 2014 or 2007 or 8, but this has been an ongoing source of loss and dispossession and destruction. And so my hope going forward is that they will no longer have to face this, and that there will be, as Iman said, a break with current American foreign policy as it comes to Palestine, and the ability for Palestinians to live with dignity and with full access to resources and rights in their own homes, and that they're able to travel freely throughout historic Palestine and not be confined to one strip of land under siege, unable to leave or enter or have any sort of freedom of movement. And so as long as Israel exists in its form as an apartheid state, as a colonial state, then I'm going to live in constant fear that the same thing is going to continue to happen over and over again. And so my wish for them is that it will not, and that they will be able to rebuild and regather and put their lives back together, and that they can only move forward from there.
So, Professor, give me your message then to lawmakers, like the Democratic senators, members of Congress from our area. You know, how do you think the U.S. could make a positive difference for the people of Gaza?
Palestinian civil society has been clear in its ask of us, which is to boycott, divest from, and sanction Israel for its treatment of Palestinians. The last 16 months have made it clear, as Americans, our own institutions are under threat because of our relationship to Israel. We as a society came to a standstill over this destructive relationship. So I would ask lawmakers and anyone really to say that enough is enough.
Before I let you both go, Deanna, your message to President Trump and the faction of Republicans who cheered his ideas about taking over Gaza and displacing its residents to Jordan and Egypt?
It's very shameful and it's disgusting to hear as an American. And I think that every member of his administration needs to publicly reject his remarks and not explain them or try to spin them. And they need to, you know, have this break, as we said, with their current policy. They need to support the restoration of U.S. funding to UNRWA and the U.N. Human Rights Council and aid to rebuild Gaza and not take over it. And they have to condition the military aid that we have to Israel and prevent any further war crimes and abuses from happening. This is something that we're complicit in. We've always been complicit in, and we bear a responsibility for as a nation. And it's been enough. And our tax dollars cannot continue to support this. And so I want the Republican lawmakers to know that, you know, Palestinians are not your pawns. They're not people that you can uproot and throw around and move as you wish. They're human beings who have their own agency and who deserve to determine their own destiny. And it's not in your hands to treat them like they are part of some real estate development, because they're not.
We've been speaking with Diana Uthman of American Muslims for Palestine and with UChicago sociology professor Iman Abdelhadi. They're members of the local Palestinian American community reacting to President Trump's claim that the U.S. should take over Gaza and drive Palestinians from their homes there. Thank you both so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sasha.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Andrea Guthman and Micah Yasin. It was edited by Dan Tucker and mixed by Linnea Dominic. For the latest news and analysis with a local twist, subscribe to our podcast to keep you informed and in the know. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening. We'll meet again soon.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.